Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today on HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking to Jerry LaBelle. He's a nurse practitioner for WorkMed at St. Mary's Hospital up in Auburn, Maine. We're going to be talking about aging workforce trends, how they really impact you today. Second, we're going to be talking with Susan Dench. She is the author of The Responsibility Rules. She's going to be talking about personal responsibility in the workplace, how it impacts employers and employees. And we're talking with Jerry LaBelle, nurse practitioner at WorkMed, St. Mary's Hospital today. Jerry, thank you for being on the show.
Yes, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Oh, great. Well, I know we're going to be talking about the aging workforce today. One of the things that I know kind of sets this in context is this is a growing population, correct?
That is correct.
Do you have any statistics on that in terms of over the next few years, what we're looking at?
Yes. Basically, we're continuing to see the population continuing to age across the country, but especially in Maine. And that if we look at some of the data that's been published in the past, what we're seeing is the population, from a percentage standpoint, continues to grow. And the number of workers that's currently in the workforce over age 55 continues to grow. If we look at the aging workforce, we're really looking at anyone over the age of 55 as considered to be aging. And some people will debate that, but again, most specialty groups will state that greater than 55 is considered part of the aging workforce. If we look at the data on that, if you look at 1998, about 31% of the people were over 55 who were in the workforce. As of 2008, we had about 39%. And if we're looking at what's going to happen in the next several years, by 2018, we're really looking at having about 43 to 44% of our workforce over age 55, which is really going to impact employers in the future.
Now, that's really a shift in terms of the number of aging workers, and that certainly leads to specific challenges, and we'll talk about that today. But the other thing that I think is an important question is we're seeing, especially in our practice, that with the aging workforce, some of the people who may have thought they could retire and were planning to retire because of the economy can't. And so that also is increasing the number of people that are in the workforce.
That is correct. And we're going to continue to see that trend. I mean, the baby boomer generation is continuing to grow, and that shift in population is going to be in place for the next 20 years. And we're really not going to see a decrease in the aging workforce until 20 years has gone by. But we are seeing people that are staying in the workforce longer, and there are multiple reasons for that. People are unable to, complete their life cycle without some additional income, and that, but it does. It's going to impact their ability to live the quality of life, because as they age, their bodies are not able to meet the demands as well as when they were in their 20s and 30s.
No, that's absolutely true. You know, it's funny, but I was talking to a friend of mine, and he's an older friend of mine, and he's 66, and he said, you know, I'm really thinking about retiring next year, and his wife piped up and went, absolutely not.
Because, that's correct.
You know, there's another factor that keeps people working. So, anyways, it's a little humor today, but that's what it is. So,
I mean, I have patients in their 70s that I see with work-related injuries. My oldest patient to date who had a work-related injury that I've treated, because I like to track that data, is 82 years of age.
Wow.
Yes. So we are seeing people who are staying in the workforce much longer than what we saw just 20 years ago.
So let's talk a little bit about how this impacts employers. We'll start with the employers, then we'll work in the employees, kind of give a context to what we're doing here today.
Okay.
So tell me a little bit about some of the challenges. They may seem obvious, but there may be others that are out there that people may not say to themselves, oh, what are some of the challenges that employers will face when dealing with having an older workforce?
Okay. What we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of physical changes in people in that particular age category. And we're looking at there's a decrease in their ability to carry materials effectively. So we're seeing less what's called muscle elasticity and less muscle strength. So people's ability to lift, carry, bend, and twist diminishes. The individual's ability to heal diminishes. And part of that's because of their oxygen-carrying capacity decreases with the aging process. I mean, if we're looking at an individual between 25 and 65, if we look at the individual when they get to 65, their ability to carry oxygen in their bloodstream decreases by about 26%. So, and oxygen is what fuels the body in all of us. And
now,
so,
you know, I just want to cut in for just a second.
Sure.
Somebody's health certainly is a big factor in terms of if they stayed active or if they're, you know, in better shape maybe. And again, I don't want to so much talk about the employee side yet, but that does have a factor into it. And do employers look at that when they're, you know, I certainly know employers have said to us that it's wellness is an issue today. And so that's something that employers look at, correct?
That is correct. And that employers are taking a harder look at that, but there's still a lot of work that needs to occur. The medical community and the employer community needs to work closer together on how to help people age in place in the workplace, and that employers still don't fully understand the impact that the aging process has on people. We're still seeing employers who are looking for that employee to return back to work from a fairly significant injury much sooner than what they're capable of returning back towards. So we need to do a better job about educating the employers on how to handle people over age 55.
So tell me some of the if you can give an example, maybe, of someone who, of an employer that has to modify or change the workplace to accommodate.
Sure.
Someone in this situation, and how, what, from an employer perspective, they can be thinking, if I'm an employer listening today, oh, that's going to cost me so much more to re-engineer things. That's going to cost me so much more to, you know, having to deal with this. Or so fit that in if you could in your story.
Sure. There are pros and cons to people aging in the workplace, and that. What I'll do is I'll talk a little bit about the negative, and then we'll talk a little bit about the positive. And that if we'll use an example of a person with a shoulder injury, because we see a lot of shoulder injuries in our medical practice, and that an individual who has a we'll use a rotator cuff tear as an example. A rotator cuff tear that ends up going to surgery in a 30-year-old will most likely be doing quite well within 6 to 8 weeks. In a person over 55, 60, 65 years of age, it may take them twice as long to fully recover, improve their mobility. We also see people who will not heal extremely well and have specific limitations. So the employer is going to be being asked to potentially accommodate a restriction. And that we'll use this as an example, a construction worker who operates heavy equipment. They may not be able to do extended reaching any longer, or reaching above their shoulder or even their head to reach an item, or to lift an item above their head and put it on a shelf, or lift an item and put it in a truck. And so you're going to have limitations on people who are aging. Now, the good news, though, is when you look at people that are older, there are benefits to that. If you look at their creativity, people that have been doing this particular job for X number of years, many times have created a different way to do it so it's safer for them. And that many times the employee comes up with a method to accomplish the same task and the outcome is the same in the same amount of time, just with a little creativity. And so employers need to understand that with a little bit of additional effort, that employee can be continued to work in their environment just with a little bit of guidance. The other thing employees look at is their safety. Employees that have been in the workplace for a number of years, they don't want to see themselves get hurt. They want to continue to maintain a safe workplace. And so they're also creative in how they work interaction, how they interact with the workplace and the equipment. So we're seeing employees over 55 who have a better safety record than some of our younger folks.
Now, I can certainly see where the experience factor is clearly a huge benefit to an organization who, you know, wants to make sure they're bringing in someone who's trained, who knows what they're doing. And yes, I can see that, you know, they've already lived through some of the challenges of making the mistakes way back when, and may have a stronger safety record or may certainly know all that. So there is a trade-off, correct, between the ability to have somebody who can maybe be a little more flexible depending on the job, or be a little more mobile, again, depending on
that
the job.
That is correct.
With the experience factor. And, you know, you're not talking really about anything that's any different than any HR manager or any owner really thinks about anytime they hire somebody. It's a trade-off between the two.
Absolutely. And that the older folks also, if you look at people at different age groups, some of the age groups have what I call counterproductive behavior. And if you look at most of our older folks, not all of them, but most of our older folks have lived through and have developed a form of wisdom on how to avoid this counterproductive behavior. And so our older people are more inclined to work harder to get back to the workforce as quickly as possible.
Well, there is this common statement that you hear from employers that they have a better, quote-unquote, work ethic. Now, you could argue that that may or may not be true, and certainly I know a lot of younger workers who have great work ethics. So it's really more personal in terms of that nature, in terms of, you know, from that aspect.
Absolutely, because I see many people, again, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, who have a tremendous work ethic and want to get back to the workforce as quickly as possible. So I want to make sure I don't broad brush our younger population and lead people to believe that they don't want to get back as quickly as possible. But I find the older population has an incredible motivation that really they work very hard to get back to the workplace. Most of them do, like anyone. Not all of them do.
No, I understand that. You know, so if an employer is looking to hire experienced senior workforce, are there things they can do to make the environment in the office, in the plant, in wherever it is they are, are there things they can do easily to better accommodate for a older workplace and prepare them for it?
Sure, there are. The employer needs to be looking at what is the job requirements and what are the physical requirements, what are the emotional or social requirements of the work task, because you really need to be looking at tailoring work to the older worker, if that's at all possible. And practices like myself help employers in this particular area, because many times employers don't know quite how to tailor the workplace. So we're looking at emotional factors. We're especially taking a careful look at what are the physical requirements of the job. And employers can change some of the mechanical requirements for an older worker that's going to protect them further and also protect their younger population. Other things the employers can do is what's called a periodic skill assessment. And what that is every year an older employee should be sat down with their supervisor and have a discussion as what is their performance? What is their physical performance? Is the person having any difficulty maintaining a level of production for their company? Is the employee having any difficulty in a specific area? And that they should be, there should be some form of assessment that can be developed with the employee as to how are they performing? Are they maintaining their performance? Or is there anything the employer needs to do to help that older person continue to function effectively? Because the employer is faced with maintaining a certain level of productivity while keeping their cost in check, and I understand that perfectly.
Now, there's a term called fitness for duty.
Yes.
And, you know, some employers that maybe have specific job requirements of lifting 50 pounds or doing different things, or in a safety-sensitive position and require either health screenings or different things to ensure the safety, not only to themselves but to the workplace. Is this something that you encourage, you think is a good process for an employer to look into? You know, certainly we're not necessarily right now talking about drug testing or any of that. That's a separate topic. But this is just for the health screening.
Yes, I do encourage that. I encourage it, interesting enough, not just in our over 55 folks, but I also encourage it in some of our, even our younger folks, and I'll explain that a little bit. The fitness for duties evaluations are looked at where we're assessing the individual, and we're seeing people more and more coming to our practice with employers requesting these fitness for duties. And what happens is we're really looking at the physical requirements of that individual, and can they meet the physical expectations that an employer has at the workplace. What we're also seeing, however, is that employers where that employee is already working in the system, we're doing fitness for duty evaluations on them after a significant health event. As an example, if they fall down and break their hip at home, if they've had a heart attack, if they've had an episode of abdominal surgery, where the employers are asking us to look at that individual to determine are they safely able to return back to the workplace. Because as workplace experts, we're looking at, is this the safest environment for that patient to continue to be in? And unfortunately, some of the other specialists in the medical community don't have the expertise to really be looking at the workplace. And we can provide benefit to that employer, because it makes for a safer return to the workplace.
We're talking with Jerry LaBelle, and he is a NERC practitioner up at WorkMed at St. Mary's Hospital. And we're talking about the aging workforce. So, you know, we've talked a little bit about employers, Jerry, but I want to talk a little bit about employees. And, you know, employees are a little bit nervous about giving information to their employers. They're a little nervous about asking for things or talking about what they may need for accommodations, because they may feel that that may be something that disqualifies them or may be an impediment to them getting a job. So how do you encourage this aging workforce to deal with these type of issues, first, if they're looking for a job, and then second, of course, if they're employed?
I've always encouraged my patients, my younger patients, to be as honest as they can with the employer. I find that most employers, at least in this part of the country, are very open to the employee and their willingness to be open and upfront about any type of physical disability or physical impairment that they may have. And that I find most of the employers are very much willing to recognize that that employee has a tremendous amount of integrity in even reporting that to the employer. Now, does an employee have to report that to the employer? No, they do not. And many employers are asking practices like mine to do this evaluation on the individual. They're called pre-placement examinations to determine can they work in this particular part of the workforce. But employees do have concerns about divulging information. And they don't legally have to divulge any form of impairment that they particular have to the employer. even though I encourage it, they legally don't have to provide that information to the employer.
Do you believe that employees that are older are more comfortable doing it than younger employees? And do you believe that there is a different perception from somebody who's necessarily older being able to just, you know, say what they feel like they need to say?
Basically, I see, in order to answer that question, the answer is basically I see it across all spectrums of the age group. I see some distrust with the younger generations or the middle generations or even the older generations. And part of it comes from their past experiences. And that I've had a number of people who are older that really don't want to divulge their previous health information to an employer because they may have been not accommodated properly, or they may have been disciplined not appropriately by their previous employer. So I see it across the spectrum, but I would say most people don't really want to be fully upfront with an employer and divulge their health history to the individual.
Well, certainly as someone who does a lot of outplacement career transition work, you know, one of the things that we always tell candidates looking for work is that, you know, you have to be smart with what you say. Never lie, absolutely, emphatically, never, ever lie. But that they don't have to divulge anything from a personal nature or personal, you know, health side of the equation.
Correct.
If, in fact, they have health screenings and all those things that go into that, that's a little bit different. But the reality is that they don't. And so it really is truly a comfort zone of that person to feel like they can go out and say what they need to say. I will say that I agree that if you have an issue, it is better off to, you know, try to see if the employer can accommodate you rather than to get hired then spring it on them.
Correct.
So, you know, that creates ill will on both sides of the coin at that part. So
now what an employer can do, though, is they can ask a specific question. Is I always encourage employers to put together some very comprehensive job descriptions for the job that they're hiring their employee for. And a lot of those, all the job descriptions, as far as I'm concerned, should have what are the physical requirements and the emotional requirements of doing this specific job that individual is being asked to perform. And what an employer can do, or a human resource professional can do, is they can ask that potential employee to review the job description. They can then ask that employee, can you physically and emotionally and socially do this job in your opinion without any difficulties? And that employee, that's not breaching any HIPAA confidentiality rules, and the employee needs to answer that. And the employee needs to answer that to the best of their abilities. And most employees will say, oh, yes, I can do that. Unfortunately, sometimes they say that in spite of not having completely read the job description and especially the physical requirements. So I would encourage employers out in our communities to be looking at improving their job descriptions and physical requirements of the work task in order for them to be able to answer that question with the employees.
I could not agree with you more. One of the things that we see over and over again when we talk to employers is job descriptions that are outdated, that are not complete, that really haven't been reviewed in years.
Correct.
And yet there is just so much that ties into those job descriptions from a hiring and a legal perspective and making sure that the employee truly knows what they're doing.
Correct.
And yes, of course, there's always what I like to say, the famous line at the end that says, and any other duties deemed necessary. We get that. But
absolutely,
really, if you can explain it out, what it is the person is doing, you're going to get a more productive employee and a
correct,
more happier employee.
And employers need to really be looking in the details of what truly are those physical requirements. As an example, you know, how much bending, how much twisting, how much lifting overhead, how much repetitive gripping or grasping that they're doing with their hands, how much activity they're doing with their feet. And that should all be listed on a job description. And you can develop that information on your job description on a percentage basis or a number of cycles per minute. It depends on the type of job that's being analyzed. And unfortunately, a lot of employers don't have the expertise to put together that level of detail. And we're, in my practice, we'll educate employers on how to put together this type of job description for individuals. So we find it can be very helpful. We like to train people on how to put together this type of detail in a job description, because down the road it can really prevent a number of injuries occurring in the employer site.
No, you're absolutely correct. And it's that partnership, not only with your HR professional, your business leader, but your medical professional.
Correct.
That can create a really solid program for any employer and protect your employees. You know, I say it all the time, and I truly believe it. Most, 99.9% of all employers want to do the right thing.
Correct.
They just are so busy doing their day jobs that they don't have time to think about all this little stuff. All this little, I like to call the little compliance stuff that can hurt you in the back end, but just they don't have time to think about it. And
so
that is why, you know, we're all here to help them. And, you know, I appreciate so much you being on the show today. You've really provided us some really good information having to do with the aging workforce today.
Well, thank you.
And so if somebody wants to reach you at WorkMed, how would they do that?
The best way would be to call me, and I'll give you our number. Our number is 207-753-3080, or they can just email me. And my email address is jlebel, and that's L-E-B-E-L, at stmarysmaine.com, and Maine is M-A-I-N-E.
Perfect. Well, you have a wonderful day, and I appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you very much, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
And we will be right back.
Every second, someone turns to OnStar for help.
OnStar Center.
I just woke up and my car was stolen.
I hate that you had to call us under these circumstances, but I'll be happy to assist you. Are you in a safe location?
Yeah, the car was in the driveway. My wife's car was behind mine. I come out to get the newspaper. Her car's out in the street. So they pushed her car out to get to my car.
Do you have the stolen vehicle report number?
550.
Now you can add this kind of protection to your car with new OnStar FMV.
Police Department.
I have a location on a stolen vehicle. It's just off of Riddler Brook Court. It's stationary.
Thanks, OnStar. We have 3 units going out there.
This is Keith.
This is the OnStar Center. We have located the vehicle. Police will be contacting you shortly.
Okay, thanks so much.
OnStar is built into most new Chevy, Buick, GMC, and Cadillac models. And now, you can even add it to your car with new OnStar FMV. Visit OnStar.com for FMV retailers, availability, system limitations, and details.
I'm in a state of caffeination, got all my fingers shaking, must have been my large Americano, mochaccino, macchiato. Now the family's gone to bed, and that's my favorite time to get some tips on better rates. Because my State Farm guy answers late, and even when it's not my agent, someone's standing by so patient. Getting coverage questions answered helps me to relax. Get to a better state, State Farm.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Packers.
Vikings.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we make a real difference in the building blocks of life. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly so do our communities. Real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And this is the HR Power Hour, and we are talking to Susan Dent. She's the author of the book, The Responsibility Rules. And you got to be on Fox and Friends and talk to them, didn't you?
Yeah, actually, thanks to my husband. I was really lucky. I love Fox and Friends. We watch it every morning. And I hadn't had any luck contacting anybody. And one day we were watching, and Gretchen was mentioning the accountability and responsibility she held her children to. And my husband said, you know, you should really contact her. I think she'd like to have you on the show. So I took a stab at what her email address was. And within an hour, I got a response from her saying, I love this subject. Let's talk to my producer. And within a week or so, I was on the show, and it was lots of fun. I had a great response, and it just got the ball rolling.
Well, Susan, thank you for being on the show. You are
thanks for having me.
Owner of Muddy Dog Media, is that
I
correct?
I am, that's right.
That's great. And you have a new book coming out. We're going to talk a lot about this, but what's the name of the new book coming out? When is it supposed to come out?
The new book is called Generation Soup, The Recipe for Cooking Up Innovation, Loyalty, and Growth in the Generational Melting Pot. It's actually part of a series of books. The Responsibility Rules was the appetizer. Each other book is a main course. And the books will all talk about responsibility in different areas of our lives. So the government, in this case the workplace, schools, individuals, and families. Because we really see personal responsibility or lack of personal responsibility in every part of our life. It's just such a hot topic. Whenever I speak, I always see everybody nodding up and down, you know, in the audience and so on. Everyone has a story about how this affects them. So I thought we'd do is not just, you know, not just have an initial conversation on responsibility, but also how personal responsibility affects us in all areas of our lives.
Personal responsibility. So let's talk about that for a second. Certainly it's the buzzword, no question out there today.
It is.
And there's a question of, you know, who's responsible, the employer or the employee, or what the balancing act between the two is. So, you know, talk to me a little bit about in the workplace, because we'll start there. Tell me a little about how you think the perception is out there from employers and employees, and how you aim to change that.
Well, I think that most employers would tell you that, you know, they've got a motivated workforce and they're all innovative and they've got employee loyalty and so on, and that's how they're seeing growth. But I can tell you in the work that I've done with working with companies in a consulting capacity, that a lot of what I see is there's a lot of blaming going on between the departments that you see as a consultant that you might not see if you're that close to the situation. But you see a lot of people making excuses as to why their work couldn't be done. Well, I didn't get their report done because I didn't have the numbers from another division coming in instead of going over and being proactive about it. So you see a lot of these sort of things happening in the workplace, and I think there's sort of a denial about that going on, because one of the things that I'm positing in the Generation Soup is that we have a lot of we have four different generations now that are coming into the workforce. So we have the older, you know, the World War II generation, which is still the silent generation. We have baby boomers who are, you know, this huge bolus of people were born and we're still in the workforce. We have Gen X, which is relatively small, and then we've got Gen Y, which is a relatively big demographic. And as they come into the workforce, of course, we've all got different ways of working and different ways of doing everything. So what I'm saying is that we've got some issues here, and there's a common ground that we can all work together if we practice personal responsibility in the workplace, because it really provides a framework for all generations, all the things that they want to get out of working. It provides a framework for that. And so I think what we see is I'm asking people to really make three commitments. The first commitment is from a leadership standpoint to realize that everything starts at the top. If you've got the cultural aspects of a corporation, the vision and so on, all that really comes from the top, and everybody looks to the president, the CEO on down to see what's going on up there. And they want to know how they fit into that structure and what makes their work important and how are they part of something bigger than themselves. The second commitment that I'm asking people to make is a commitment to making people a core responsibility. One of the things that we all want is growth, learning, those opportunities. And I think we find that when those things happen, we find that we innovate, that we're motivated, that we want to come into work and we want to work with our team. So I think if you can make a commitment to making people a core commitment, and that means, you know, frequent feedback as far as, you know, how are you doing? So people know they get that feedback, so they know, are they doing something right or wrong? And then the third commitment is the acceptance and expectation of personal responsibility. So if something goes wrong, we have, you know, the road is littered with CEOs that make, you know, they blame people for what happened before them and so on. Well, it's not my fault. You know, we've got that in our administration, unfortunately. No, it was President Bush's fault. Well, at some stage of the game, the buck has to stop here, and responsibility has to start at the top. And so I think if we have that expectation of everyone taking personal responsibility for their actions, we really lay out a path for innovation to be ignited in the organization, employee loyalty, and then ultimately growth.
When we're talking about employers setting that tone in the organization, tell me about some of the steps they might take to really ensure that employees understand that there is a line that has to be drawn, and that this is your responsibility, these are our responsibilities. How do you set that example? Certainly, we know that with handbooks, you know, you set policies, with procedures, you set accountability. But how do you draw the line as to whose responsibility it is from that level, of that personal responsibility level?
Well, I think, again, everything comes from the top, and it's got to be part of your culture. So if part of your culture is that, you know, the buck stops with me, and everyone has that, that is not just talked about, it's lived. If you have got to see that from a CEO perspective, if you see that the CEO is taking on responsibility, if you have a bad quarter and the CEO says, well, you know what, I really messed up on that strategy, that wasn't so great, then can say, well, you know, it's okay to fail, but I've got to have, you know, I'm taking rational risk, but I'm not being fired for that. So it's okay for me to take that risk, but it's also okay that, you know, I'm taking responsibility for something that didn't work. But I think, again, that really has to come from the top, and it has to be cultural. That has to be built into the DNA of every company, knowing that they are responsible. And if they work hard, they're going to be rewarded for it as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We had a couple of weeks ago Ann Rhodes on, and she talks about culture and building a culture in an organization, national speaker. And I think next week we have Don McPherson coming on from Modern Survey to talk about employee engagement, how to measure it. So, you know, this is really about somebody's personal responsibility, somebody internally. I guess my first question is, how did you stumble onto this? How did you suddenly decide to talk about it?
Well, I think I've talked about it a lot. We've talked about it within our family and so on, but actually this happened a couple of years ago. We had a situation at our house where we were gone, and a friend of our daughter's came over and was pet-sitting for us. And our daughter knew about it, so she was culpable, but she was with us. But we came back, and there had been an underage drinking party at our house while we were gone. So we called the police, and the police knew every single kid on that list. They knew not just the kid. They knew exactly the street address where they lived and the parents, which means they had been doing this over and over again. And so it took a couple of weeks. Out of the 20 kids that were there, I called all the parents, and I only had two parents that said, oh my gosh, I couldn't believe my kid was there, they'll be right over to apologize. And the other 18, I got responses from, well, so what, they were only there for 20 minutes. And one guy was screaming at me so loudly on the phone, I actually had to hold it away from my ear. So I got really upset and started writing a letter about personal responsibility to our youngest daughter. And a couple of weeks later, she had a couple of situations with entitlement on her soccer team where the helicopter parents swooped in to make things happen. And so, again, you know, the coaches weren't backed up. They quit, and they weren't backed up by the school, unfortunately, and I got really upset then, and I just said, you know, this is the next generation coming out. If I don't do something, who's going to do something? And that's when I really got mad and decided to start talking about it, and that's when I wrote the book.
Well, you know what? Sometimes it takes a moment, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Something that triggers that reaction. And certainly that's something that I think more parents and more people should be involved with. We are talking to Susan Dent. She's the author of the book, The Responsibility Rules. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about the generations, the different generations in the workplace. And the first segment, we talked about older generations. Jerry LaBelle was on, a nurse practitioner for WorkMed at St. Mary's Hospital. And he was talking about the aging workforce. And that generation is still there. I mean, they're still going. And you talked a little bit during the break about your dad. Tell that story, if you would, and then we'll continue with the generational conversation.
Sure. My dad is 81, and he just retired as an engineer from GE. And he started there, you know, years and years and years ago. And you think about all the changes he's seen with technology and so on. And sometimes he tells me, you know, Susan, you got to keep up with the times. So, but he finally got to the point where he retired years ago, and they had a brain drain. aging. They lost so many people through attrition and so on in retirements that they called a lot of retirees back. And he loves it. He's been going in for probably 15 years now, and he chooses which projects he'd like to work on. He comes in and out as he pleases and so on, and just really, really enjoys it, because that's really, he's an inventor at heart. He has a lot of patents and so on. But he finally got to the point where the politics just really got him this year, and they had a new system that they implemented, and he just said, I don't want to do it anymore. And so he's left, but he, 81. And one of actually his biggest joys has been that when they have co-op students come in — I went to Northeastern and I was a co-op student also — but when they have co-ops and interns come in, he loves sharing the information and the knowledge that he has. And that's one of the issues that I think we've got to be very cognizant of, that if we don't find a way for baby boomers to work with the Gen Y workers coming in, there are a lot of products that we have out there that are either heritage products or they have a long lead time and so on. So, for instance, he worked with large steam turbines. I mean, that's heavy engineering stuff. And it's really, that is a heritage product, because there are a lot of tips and shortcuts and so on that the older generation can show the younger generation. But if we experience turnover because we don't, Gen Y comes in and they're not happy with the way the workforce or the work environment is at a certain place, then they're going to leave. And then you've got the seniors that are going to leave, and now we've got a big problem. So I think it's just so important for us to really realize this is an issue. It's coming up soon. They're saying now that by 2025, 75% of all workers in the workforce are going to be Gen Y. That's really an important demographic for us to make sure that we're keeping them satisfied and motivated at work.
No, you're right. And we're talking with Susan Dench, and she is the owner, president of Money.
All of the above, yeah.
Media. Yes, all of the above. Yeah. Chief Cook, Bottle Washer.
Exactly.
Of Money Dog Media. You're absolutely correct. And certainly we've talked about the generations. It's interesting. We have seen that there is, if a organization can set up a good mentoring program between Gen Y and the greatest generation, yeah, and or the baby boom generation, you can really have some incredible success. You know, it's interesting. I did have, as we have talked about, I do speaking on generational differences. And one of the things is that Gen Xers sometimes come up to me afterwards and go, well, what about me?
Yes.
You know, because it's almost a little bit from their perspective, the lost generation.
Yeah.
And it's really not that at all. It's just the fact that the size of the generation is a lot smaller than the size of the other two. And so Gen Y is the up-and-coming generation, and they are technologically advanced, and that's where we're moving to, technology. And they have become such a key element to this this new technological future that we have. And so from your aspect, you're absolutely correct. We do need to merge those two to get more information to Gen Y so they can run the place.
Well, not only that, you're talking about flexibility or technology, but technology actually provides flexibility. And one of the things that we're used to is you go into an office, you're there from 8 to 5, and that's where you are. And working at home, I've had situations where I've been able to have, work-at-home situations, and that was great. But you don't always have that, and companies don't always feel comfortable with that sort of thing. But, how many times have you gone in to get your teenager out of bed, and they're, asleep with a phone under the pillow, or you get texts at all hours of the day and night? I mean, that's just how they work. They are turned on, plugged in, tuned in, 24 hours a day, and that's how they want to work. For them, where we used to, we've worked because we have a living and we need to, support a house and all that sort of stuff. They don't really look at work the same way. For them, it's a means to have a lifestyle. And they're also the first generation that's coming in where the norm is a dual earning household. So you're going to start having all those roles that are going to be negotiated and so on. So men and women are going to start negotiating the parental roles and who's going to be doing what, their roles and responsibilities, which means you have to have a flexible workplace. And flexible workplace, that's exactly what technology is all about. You can work anywhere, anytime. And a lot of these, a lot of things that I'm seeing is that people are really bristling against being in an office. They don't understand why they have to be in the office. If I can work on a weekend, why don't you just say, here's your project, let me go and measure me on how well I do getting that project done. And I think that's really become a big issue as well. And that's something that, we always come in and we say, Gen Y, boy, they are entitled, they're job hoppers, they want praise all the time and so on. But you can really turn those things around and say, they're technologically astute. They're open to new ways of doing things. They have a lot of strengths that they can bring to the workforce if we can just get past our prejudices and look and see how we can work. work together.
Well, I think it is incumbent upon organizations to understand those dynamics. I mean, part of the key area here is that there are differences. And if you at least acknowledge there are differences, and then you will prevent the conflict that will occur between the generations, which is nothing more than a misunderstanding of what the cultural norm is. You know, I always kid, but I talk about the fact the first time I ever tried to explain to my grandmother, God bless her, rest her soul, about a fax, and trying to explain that a piece of paper went into a machine and another piece of paper somewhere else came out with the information on it. And I could have explained it till I was blue in the face, and she would have just nodded and go, that's nice, dear. Right? I mean, that's the reality. There's a conceptual understanding. It just wasn't going to happen. And so how we communicate between the generations and making them understand that it's okay is key.
Well, and I agree with that. And I think also there, as you know, we talked about personal responsibility and a culture of accountability within an organization. Is they want their work to count. They want their work to matter. And they want to be, it's not that they're lazy. They want to show up. They want to do the work. They want to work hard. But they also want to be rewarded for that. And I think a lot of them see a lot of what their parents went through as drudgery, if you will, that they went to work and it was drudgery. They didn't want to go to work. They want to come in and they want to be passionate and they want to be engaged. We have a 22-year-old who goes to art school, and she's very ambitious about what she wants to do. And it's been really interesting listening to her through some of her internships, what she's looking for in a company when she graduates and so on. She wants to be engaged. She wants to do a really good job. She wants to work hard. She doesn't mind putting in the hours, but it's got to be work that matters to her. And isn't that what we really all want? So if we can create an environment in the workplace where we're all doing something that we want, it benefits everybody. And I think, you know, again, I think we also have to, you talked about mentoring opportunities. I think those are important. One of the best lessons I ever learned was when I worked for HP in the medical products division. I sat in engineering. Luckily, coming from a family of engineers, that wasn't too traumatic for me as a marketing person, but it could have been. But one of the engineers came in from MIT, and he had an undergraduate and a graduate degree from there. And when he came in, he was so astute that the first thing he did was seek out an older mentor, because he said, you know, I have all this book smarts, but I have no street smarts. And I thought that was the greatest lesson.
Right.
Here's this kid who's 25, 26 years old, and it was the first thing he did when he got there. And I think that's just so, you know, we talked about this a bit before, but I think that's really important. But I think it's also important that you have to match up the right mentor with the right person, or I think it can really backfire. You got to be careful.
No, there are personalities that play into this. And I think one of the other things that's interesting, and we've seen this on the career transition side of our business, is that some people frown at different types of jobs. Mm. It's interesting, you talked a little bit a few seconds ago about work that matters. Well, some things just need to be done even if it isn't the fact that it's work that matters.
That's why they call it work.
That's why they call it work. That's why they don't call it play.
Yeah.
But there is this perception at times that I want to do something, younger generation may say, though I have heard it even in other generations, I want to do something that matters. Well, you're skilled to do something that is work. And so there is a little bit of the disconnect between the goal, mm-hmm. Your aspirational goal, and what you maybe did in school, or what you really decided to take in college, or what you really learned in life. And it doesn't necessarily connect. And so that sometimes causes a problem in terms of your attitude, your engagement, you're willing to do what you have to do versus mm-hmm. what you want to do. And so that does take a challenge. How do you think that plays into some of the things that you've seen from your research?
Well, actually, one of the things I think that we have, helicopter parents have a lot to answer for, because helicopter parents at home become helicopter managers in the workplace. And I think one of the things that we've really done a poor job of in the kids that are coming through now is we don't let them fail. And you, to be successful and to be a responsible adult, you've got to let a kid fail, because, you know, you think about a 2 or 3 year old, everything they want to do, I want to do it myself, leave me alone, I want to do it by myself. And by the time they're, you know, 18, 19, 20 and beyond, if the parent keeps picking them up and doing those things for them, they don't want to do it anymore. And I think that's some of what you see in the workplace. I mean, that was never for us. It's like, you know, your room is filthy, go pick it up. You know, now it's like, oh, well, don't worry, I'll take care of it for you. Just go out and play sports or whatnot. We coddle our children. We tell them how wonderful they are, even when they're not wonderful. We have a lower bar for them. We need to make sure that we keep the bar high so there's something for them to aspire to. That's how they become mature, responsible adults. So I think really a lot of that sort of thing that, you know, here's the drudgery of work, the things that you don't want to do, I think a lot of that starts in the home, and it starts really early in the home with parents expecting, having certain expectations of their children and making sure those expectations are met.
Well, that falls right into the workplace with supervisors who are not willing to tell employees how they really work, not really willing to do the performance appraisals and evaluations that are necessary, or afraid to tell them that they're not doing a good job, or afraid to not necessarily speak up and say, hey, you know, you're not doing it right. I'll just fix it after you're done. It's not exactly how to make it. I mean, productivity goes down, profitability goes down, all the things that go with it. And that is a natural extension of what they're learning at home.
And I couldn't agree more with you. And one of the things that you just said also was, picking up for them afterwards and so on, and having that honest conversation. And one of the things that I, one of the bullet points that I have underneath the making people a core competency is having honest communications with your employees. Because it's not doing anybody any favors if you're keeping a person in a job, which they somehow know, you know, they know in their heart that this is not the right job for them. So you're not doing anyone any favors by keeping them in that position. And they're not growing as a person. They're not growing as a professional. So the best thing and the kindest thing you can really do to them is either find another position for them that takes care, that takes advantage of their skill sets, or set them free so they can do something else that's, that works for them.
Now, I've talked with supervisors that, you know, we've gone through this conversation of either coaching or some process, and they've had to go out and make that tough conversation, have that tough conversation. Afterwards, they come back and go, geez, the employee wasn't surprised at all.
They never are.
And a matter of fact, we had one that said the employee actually said, well, it's about time.
Wow.
And, you know, they really would just, you know, like finally someone's made the decision to tell me what I already know. But I'll coast along. I'll do what I need to do. And it doesn't help anybody in that process at
all. It doesn't. And in fact, so I think that's important. And I think there's something else that's really important also. And that's the importance of saying you're sorry. If something happens that goes wrong and you need to make an apology, whether that's a public apology for, you know, the something that's gone, that's happened in your company, or there was an indiscretion or something that happened, or so, you know, bad financial result or whatever it was, I think it's incumbent upon whoever is responsible for that to be able to have the courage to say I'm sorry and not sweep that under the rug, because that really goes all hand in hand with having an ethical environment, an environment in which you know that honesty, integrity are valued. So those are all kind of honest conversations that you have to have. But they're very tough to have. But this is one thing about personal responsibility. It's not for sissies. You have to be courageous to have personal responsibility, to have integrity. You have got to be a very courageous person. It takes a big person to stand up and do a lot of these things. And that's why I think a lot of people shy away from it. But it is not for sissies. This is not for, you know, this is for people that really have courage and they want to put in the work to have a life well lived.
Well, this has been a great conversation. Your book, The Responsibility Rules, that's currently out there in the marketplace. People can buy it where?
Amazon.
Of course, Amazon. Where else would it be? Amazon.com. If they want to get in touch with you directly, they should go to?
Actually, the best place to reach me is on SusanDench.com. And Susan Dench as in Judy Dench. So it's SusanDench.com, or they can email me at Susan@SusanDench.com.
Wait, you know that? Pretty easy.
Yeah, it
actually
is.
Pretty darn easy to do that. No, that's great. And you're hoping that the book will be out later this year, so I'm excited to hear about that. And what's the title?
The title is Generation Soup, the recipe for cooking up innovation, loyalty, and growth in the generational melting pot.
That's awesome. Looking forward to seeing it, hearing all about it. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, David.
And now the HR tip of the week. Did you know that many provisions of the Affordable Care Act go into effect in 2014? One of the things that affects you right now is the look-back period when it comes to health care. That starts January 2013. What you do now does make a difference. And that's your HR Tip of the Week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to bring back Don McPherson, president of Modern Survey. He's going to be talking about peak performance through engaged employees. What are the best practices for measuring employee engagement? And how can engaged employees really make a difference in your organization? He's also going to rate HR and how well they're doing. He's got the survey data to back it up. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM, or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.